just in case you haven't heard it enough already, Happy New Year! This podcast was recorded last week in that very strange period between Christmas and New Year's where you don't really have a clue what's going on and you're basically living off a diet of cheese, wine and pints. Ah, much simpler times. So given that, I'm not going to lie to you. Myself and Callum were ever so slightly worse for wear when we recorded this. Though, if you can make out what we're saying, we do kind of manage to drunkenly slur our way to some semblance of deeper chat as we discuss the impact of seemingly innocuous events from our childhood on our adult lives, having an absolute meltdown over very trivial things in life, really showing our emotional stability there. And we also end up having a little sing-along. So warm up your vocal cords and enjoy. Callum Wilson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. What an honour.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Have I quenched your thirst this evening?
Well, I think we've quenched both our thirsts this evening, you know, given that there's been two bottles of wine and a few beers already consumed.
Far too many. Should we apologise? We should apologise in advance.
I think we should.
For just the slurathon. It's about you.
I love you all. No, I think, you know, we've got to make people aware that this could go horribly wrong.
This could go horribly wrong.
I just want to make everyone aware that Howie has said that he's got no notes in front of him. So, you know, this could be as much of a shit show for him as it is for me. So
this is the most spontaneous podcast that I have recorded so far, because for all the others, I've got a couple of bullet points in front of me. For this one, I'm completely naked. And I also don't have any notes for me. I've no idea where this is gonna go, could go.
I think we just gotta make of it what it is.
Gotta make it happen. It's slightly spontaneous. I feel it actually, because what time is it now? About 10? 11?
20 to 11, mate.
Christ. We met quite early, we've had a lot of chat. I'm actually surprised we've still got anything left in the tank. Energy levels could be quite low.
That's true. But then, you know, given that we've been friends for
acquaintances
20 years, I mean, the longer. Fact that we've got any chat
longer.
Left.
Both longer. Moved to Luxembourg in the 90s.
We did. 99, July 99. July 1st, 99.
Really?
Yeah.
I was April 97.
Good year. Ish. If you know your wines.
Interesting.
Do you know your wines?
No, but I feel like, based on the couple of bottles that we've had tonight, you do.
I do.
You've treated me to a couple of tasty bottles of red.
A hefty couple of bottles of Protos.
How have you got away with that? I treated you to these bottles of red.
Now I'm treating you to these bottles of red.
We'll give you the credit.
Love dodging around.
I'm going to hand it over to you to set the scene for this. Sure. Really, because I can't string a sentence together. What's your name? Where'd you come from?
Cotton Eye Joe.
And sing us a song.
Sing us a song? I thought you were going to give me an interesting fact to tell me.
Yeah, I knew, I could see you, that you thought that was coming.
You're such a rogue.
Joke or song?
Joke. It's going to have to be a song, isn't it?
Yeah.
My name's Callum.
Good name.
Thank you very much. It's Scottish, if you didn't know. I'm 32. As we've already established, I've been in Luxembourg for the best part of 23 years. Good maths.
Yeah.
Good maths.
We'll double check that and we'll edit it if we need to.
No, we'll go for that. And a song. See, if I was to sing a song at a karaoke night, it's going to be James by Sit Down by James.
Oh, great song.
I sing myself to sleep. A song from the darkest hour. Secrets I can't keep. I hope, I pray.
I'm
gonna leave you with that.
Oh, we've got to finish off the chorus at some
maybe
point.
At the end of the episode
we'll bring it back in. We're gonna, just purely because of the lack of preparation for this particular podcast, we're gonna go straight in, and I'm gonna say you were quite, because obviously this podcast is all mental health focused, you were big on the mental health front way before it was cool. I remember, like, yeah. Was it second year of uni? I still remember it. You took 3 months off the booze.
Yeah. Yeah.
For your mental health, and you publicly declared that on Facebook.
Good knowledge.
And we were thinking, oh, you're odd.
So, yeah. So you have done your research.
Yeah. And he said, got a stroll of notes. I think it was February the 24th, 2009. No, but I remember it, because I remember thinking it was... Yeah. Slightly strange, but
as,
interesting.
Yeah, as a second year uni student to kick the booze for 3 months. All in the name of charity, may I add.
Yes. Was it a guy's?
Yes, absolutely. No, well, no, not really. Like, I like being set challenges. And because at the time I was a club promoter in Aberdeen as a uni student, like... Booze just comes with the territory, and I thought it would probably be a good idea to knock it on the head for a little bit. And my friend Lily at the time, she was working for a charity called Child Reach, I think it was. And so I was like, you know, sod it. I'm going to...
Reach some children.
Going to have to delete that, aren't you? And... decided to knock it on the head for 3 months. I managed to raise like 300 quid for uni, for charity.
uni?
Yeah.
It was a lot of money at the time.
It's a lot of money for a bunch
300
of...
300 Jaeger bombs.
Or VKs. so for university students, 300 quid was a lot for them to part with.
So you were... Club promoter.
Yes.
Aberdeen Uni. Aberdeen. On the face of things, and the face of things on Facebook at the time.
Yeah.
Seemed to be blossoming at uni, having a great time.
Yeah.
Out all the time, lots of friends.
Yeah.
Seemed to be enjoying it.
Yeah.
Was that the case, Callum, in hindsight?
Well, the way that you're looking at me now is...
The leading question,
I think
it?
You know the answer to that. No, it wasn't the case at all. It wasn't the case. And I would say probably from my halfway through my first year of university, second year of university, it quickly became apparent to me that I was struggling. And I didn't know why. And it took me all of, 10 years to kind of really pinpoint as to why I was struggling. You know, I was... Yeah, it was a struggle all the way through. I didn't really know who I was. I struggled with my personal identity. I struggled with, you know, where I saw myself in the future. And, you know, to really start going deep into it, feelings of, I say, self-loathing and self-hatred, it's obviously strong terms there, but they were simmering below the surface. And, you know, moving to university and moving away from home for the first time, when I probably shouldn't have done, it all just kind of came to the fold, and it was, it was pretty dark.
Pretty dark. So, two things on the back of that. So, you say you struggled with your identity.
Mm.
That's an interesting point, because again, on the face of things, it looked like you'd finally almost found your identity at uni.
Yeah.
As that kind of life and soul of the party, getting everyone out. Was there a bit of a mismatch in terms of how that was perceived and how you actually felt? Or was that used as like an overcompensation mechanism? Like, how did that work out? Because on the face of it, again, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Almost everything...
But I come back to it, I didn't realise what the hell was going on at the time.
You just did it?
I just did it. Like, I was just... I fell into this job, and I fell into, you know, being the... it sounds pathetic and to a degree, but most of my life does. It sounds mental, but I was perceived as this face of, you know, social, you know, the social social scene in Aberdeen, which is just, you know,
Perceived as having a good time constantly. Perceived as
having a good time and being the face of
that.
That, you know, that's not normal at 21 when you don't really know your ass from your elbow.
Mm.
You know, like, you don't know yourself, and then all of a sudden you're kind of wanted and expected to be this pillar of social society. Mm. It's just, that's mad. And whether that was the case or not,
yeah,
that's how I look back on it then, you know? Like,
did you feel maybe at the time or looking back at it, you felt an obligation to live up to that as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I did for 3.5 years, 4 years. And it was cool. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I had the best gig in Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
I had the, you know, the face I was, of it, yeah. I had a great little team working for me. I had a great boss working with an incredible venue who have only gone on to do bigger and better things. I learned a lot through that job, managing people.
Snorting a load of...
Yeah, we're not going to go into that because my parents are probably listening to this.
Are they? Ah, hey, Mom, Uncle hey, James and Auntie Sue. Mark and Sue, absolute legends.
Yeah, it was... It was all manners of fun.
Mm.
But when you're just starting to realise that there is something below the surface that isn't right and that you aren't as adjusted as you are expected to be, it just...
It's kind funny,
of swept up in a bunch
of bullshit, and I think, you know? The more people I speak to about things like this, I think one of the common threads is living up to other people's expectations of who you are and the identity that they've formed for you.
Yeah.
And as opposed to doing things because you want to do it or it makes you feel good, you're almost living other people's lives or, as I say, like identity they've created for you. And for anyone who's been through that, that is a pretty empty pursuit or it's a very unfulfilling life, isn't it?
It is. It is, and, you know, to touch on that and not to go into too much depth, but, like, one of my main issues has always been that I've always wanted to please other people. Mm. I've always, you know, wanted others to be happy and everybody else to be okay before, and putting that before my own happiness.
Mm.
At the detriment of my own personal happiness. And, you know, that's...
If it's any consolation, no one's going to be happy listening to you talking now. So you're making amends.
So, guys, aside, if you're enjoying your Friday night, you're about to not.
Yeah. Yeah, and that... What would you say that that's been a... Was that something you developed at uni, that kind of personality trait? Or is that something you think you've always had?
I would say it probably developed at a rapid rate at university.
Mm.
But it's probably something that's always been there, you know, from elements that I learned in my developmental stage of, like, my core beliefs, you know. So from the ages of, like, 4 until 10, which is typically when you do develop and learn your core beliefs and what's true to you, that's probably when I started to learn that. But it just kind of manifested more at university and beyond.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad when you think about it, that, you know, you learn those traits at such a young age and then they carry through all the way through your life, and you don't really have a choice in the matter.
Mm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy.
So I think that's common for everyone, that something happens during childhood, however big or small that is, and it affects them literally for the rest of time.
Yeah, it's this dark, isn't it?
Is there a... And that's a very personal question, so feel free to take a sip of wine and move on. But is there a specific moment in that... You mentioned that kind of difficult word to say after a couple of bottles of wine. Developmental. There we go. Well, a couple of those out. Stage during your childhood, is there anything that you specifically remember that you would be comfortable sharing?
Yeah. No, I think because I've done the work on myself and I've been super open and honest about doing therapy over the past couple of years, you know, and I've always been super open about my mental health.
Mm.
So there's absolutely no part of me that will shy away from
encouraging that conversation.
Yeah, there's no element of my trauma, I say in inverted commas, that I would shy away from, because it, you know, if it can help somebody further down the line, then fucking sweet. I'm down for that.
Just a quick one, actually, and sorry to interrupt, because we'll 100% go back to it, but the therapy thing, and I've mentioned this a couple of times on this podcast before, but it's way more common than people seem to think.
Yeah.
You're probably, I think, the third or maybe fourth guest who has been through therapy, who I didn't actually know prior to our conversation that had been through therapy.
Firstly, I'm insulted that I didn't tell you that I was in therapy, which,
it carried a big taboo.
And so I've done therapy 3 times.
So, in terms of 3 different...
Three different stints. Yeah. I suppose 3 So the first time was at university. I did it for about 6 months to a year, which proved unsuccessful and didn't really help in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Second time was in Aberdeen. It was in Edinburgh when I was living there for a couple of years. And the one that I've done recently, that was for 2 years. I was in therapy for 2 years. And that was the one that was...
The game changer.
The game changer. The one that was properly life-affirming and life-changing. And coincidentally happened... You know, I went into therapy at this pretty much the start of lockdown. So it would have been around May 2020. You know, I look back on it, and the reason I went into therapy was because of some Eggs Benedict. But that's a whole...
Eggs Benedict?
Yeah.
You got to give a bit of context to
that.
Is that a yolk?
That's a good one.
It's not a good one.
I think we need to stop recording.
All egg chat will be deleted out of this.
So I basically lost my marbles trying to make Eggs Benedict. and so how my depression manifests with me is that it turns into anger. And it won't be anger towards someone. You know, I'll never raise a fist, or I'll shout at someone, or it will always be inward directioned anger. And that stems from, you know, feelings of self-loathing, feelings of self-hate, which are all pretty strong words, strong terms, but that's just how it kind of manifests. So the hatred of myself, well, I do hate myself, I've learned through the years, you know, that will then manifest into anger, and then the anger will manifest into shame, and the shame will then manifest into depression, and it just... It's one big cycle.
Are you talking about my Monday to Sunday?
I wish my Monday to Sunday looked like that.
Zach Carr. Yeah, sounds positively tranquil.
Christ.
Back to the eggs Benedict.
So, but yeah, I basically lost my shit trying to make an eggs Benedict for my ex girlfriend at the time. And we were obviously locked in this apartment during lockdown, and there were all sorts of societal pressures because we're locked in this apartment by ourselves. And as much as the world knew and understands from that time, and I was making this eggs Benedict, and eggs Benedict is notoriously hard to make.
Are they? Mate, you gotta fry the fuckers.
Mate,
you just get them fried
mate,
to move on.
That's where your first problem lies. You can't fry the fuckers. It's all about poaching with care. And then it's making the bloody Bernays sauce. And Bernays sauce is, or Hollandaise, I can't even remember what it was. That's how much.
Was that was what was making you so angry?
That was it, making the bloody sauce. And I lost my shit at myself. Like, and it was unnatural, and it was not normal for somebody to lose their rag over making a sauce and throwing pots and pans around a kitchen and not wanting to hurt myself, but I was just
so pent up
pent up with myself and hateful towards myself. And I remember my girlfriend at the time, she said she had obviously seen a couple of these sorts of episodes where I'd lose my marbles, and she gave an ultimatum, say, you either get some help for this or I'm gone. And that was the best advice and words of encouragement that I'd ever received, and I needed to do it then and there.
And I think for context for anyone listening who doesn't actually know you, that is so out of character for anyone who knows you. So you're such a, and not to blow smoke up your ass, but you're such a happy-go-lucky guy, very extroverted, very funny, very charismatic, very, you know, charming, you like to be centre of attention. You bring the energy. To hear that meltdown over an eggs Benedict is very, and again, all jokes aside, but it's very strange, arguably reassuring for people who have been through a similar kind of thing. Quite maybe even sad to hear, because it's so out of character for anyone who knows you well, for you to go through that.
Yeah, and that was the catalyst for 2 years of therapy.
That was your kind of third phase or stint of going through therapy. Yeah. And I think it's something that a lot of people are considering. What made this one positively different to the previous two?
I don't know. And I wish I knew the answer to that. But I think I felt that I was able to connect with this therapist. There was maybe a sense of not wanting to rush the treatment. But then I never felt that with the others. But like, just for whatever reason, I was able to connect with Sharon, and she was fantastic. Like, she got me. She understood what I was saying. And there was no pressure on maybe a time span of how long this would take.
Yeah.
And that was reassuring. Like, She was obviously based in Luxembourg. She was English speaking, which helps. Not to say that my previous therapist I didn't have that connection, but just for whatever reason with her, it was just, there was a difference, and it made a massive difference to me.
Yeah.
And I saw her once a week for 2.5 years. 2 years.
Sorry. 2 years. And what do you think, again, don't need to go into too much detail about this, but the single best or most important or most helpful thing, if you were to pinpoint it on one thing that you got out of therapy was it even a place to be listened to? Was it a place so you could just vent and almost understand feelings that you didn't even know existed? What was it, having that space for an open conversation? Was it...
I think it was a combination of all of that. I think for me was speaking to somebody. That's Howie pouring another glass of wine, by the way. If you didn't hear that.
Thirsty work, then.
I think it was... Yeah, it was a combination. But, like, if I was to pinpoint one thing, it was... It was the real calming nature of those sessions. And again, not to kind of disparage those previous therapists or that GP that I had seen. You know, it was... There were... The one thing that worked for me was finding a mechanism that stopped me from getting into these cycles of self-loathing, hating myself, that turning into anger, that turning into depression, depression turning back into self-loathing, and then yada, 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 just like repeating itself. I found a mechanism to break that cycle, which I'd never really harnessed before, and that was cool. That was and that was learned quite early on.
Nice.
But then the thing for me with therapy was to find why I was acting like this, like what was causing those feelings of self-loathing, those, you know.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. Like, it was that was the... And you know, as much as I wanted to find that answer, you know, she would always be like, you've got to take it slow. Yeah. We're going to get there, but you can't rush this. Because if you rush this, you're not going to heal properly.
Mm.
And that was really cool.
Bit of a principle for life. Yeah. That, I think.
Don't rush things, man.
Yeah, just take it slow consistently.
Yeah.
And then... Going back to what you were saying before about maybe that one experience, or maybe multiple experiences, but the one experience that stands out in your mind in that...
Yeah.
Fucking hell, I'm going to try and say the word again. Why can't I say that word?
Developmental.
That's the one. Period in your life. Between the ages of 4 and 10.
Am I going into it?
Do you want to, if you don't want to,
let's do it.
Yeah,
like, yeah, for me, and as I'm sure many people with, you know, past trauma, some will be, you know, huge, whereas some will be so innocuous that you don't even realize it's a trauma. And that applies to me. And I know my dad and my mum are going to listen to this at some stage. And, you know, I've spoken about it with them. But there was a Mother's Day, 1996 or 1997. I would have been 6 or 7. My brother would have been...
2 or 3.
Yeah, 2 or 3. Like, you...
Big shout out to Fraser.
Big shout out to my little brother. But, you know, so he was walking. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I remember the day. So, as I said, Mother's Day. It was a absolute beautiful Mother's Day. Like, blue skies, sunshine was out. And this is when I was living in England. We had gone to a local pub. Like a but kid-friendly pub. And we had, me and my brother were in the grounds of the pub, or the, like, the play area, and we got into a scrap with a couple of other kids who were similar of age. And, you know, as kids do, kids scrap, whatever. And we'd kind of gone our separate ways. Turns out our both tables were quite near to each other. And the kids had accused me of spitting in one of their faces. And, you know, from my dad and my mum, particularly my dad, you know, the one thing you never do, you can bite, you can scratch, you can punch, you can kick, you can elbow, you can go in with a flying head, but Van Persie style, you know. But the one thing you don't do is spit. And spitting's gross. Like, spitting's the lowest of the low. But these kids accused me of it, and they told their parents confronted my parents, and, you know, ultimately it came down to my dad just didn't believe me.
Mm.
You know, he chose to believe that these kids were telling the truth. So we packed up and we went home, and I think, you know, there were accusations that I'd ruined Mother's Day and stuff like that. And I remember getting home and lying on my bed, and my mum was in my room, and she was like rubbing my shoulder, and she was just, you know, just tell your dad the truth. Just say that you spat in this kid's face, apologise, and it's done. I was like, I didn't, you know. And I remember looking out from my bed while this conversation was going on and looking through the curtains, and my dad's outside playing with my little brother and the sun's shining, and I'm just like, this is crap. Oh. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember the outcome of whether I admitted to it or not. You know, still to this day, I never spat in that little shit's face. I wish I had done.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But like, but it was the culmination.
Well, he's
of
probably,
like my...
probably, knowing the popularity of this podcast, he's probably listening now, you little fucking liar. No. Yeah, mate.
But
yeah.
But it was just like that culmination of my dad not believing me, saying that I'd ruined Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And my mum just wanting me to just tell the truth and still not believing me. It's just like, and you know, as I said, like there's that developmental phase of like between 4 and 10 or whatever it is, where you learn those core beliefs, you learn those truths that are real to you.
Mm.
And what was real to me and my core beliefs was that my dad thinks I'm a liar, my mum thinks I'm a liar. And I've brought it up with them since, you know, and they're mortified by it.
Do they even remember? I bet they don't remember.
I can't remember, like, whether they remember it or not. And it's, you know, I think that's why they feel even more guilty about it. Because you know my parents, like, yeah. You know, that they're just...
absolute legends.
You know, like they're not that way inclined. Yeah.
Sue Malcolm, I'm glad you love me much more than you ever did Callum. No, I'm joking. Mate, but that is a weird thing, yeah. That essentially, as you say, something so innocuous can have such a long-lasting impact on your sense of self-esteem, self-worth, and you take that on...
Yeah.
For the rest of your life. It's honestly one of the things that almost gives me the fear about having kids is that at any point you can just
and again, I'd reiterate, my parents were the most
amazing,
and they are the most loving, generous, kind, wise people you'll ever meet.
I mean, could have donated more to my marathon effort, but that aside,
you know, I'm not gonna say they're perfect, but here we are. But you know what I mean? Like, it's gnarly and...
Mate, it's a weird
it's
thing.
It's so utterly innocuous. Do I harbour any resentment towards them for it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I would never, in a million month of Sundays...
How can you? It wasn't done maliciously.
No.
They're such nice people. And you never know, like...
Yeah.
They're humans. Might be having a bad day.
Yeah.
Stressed at work, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do something in the heat of the moment that goes against your values as a human, that's, or supposedly goes against, you know, that's difficult.
Yeah.
I remember, it's a similar thing. And I appreciate this conversation might sound ridiculously privileged, but... I literally remember when I was probably about 5 or 6 coming home from school. We'd been doing some drawing obviously pictures from like his Bible stories, wherever it was. And I came home and I quite liked art and I liked drawing. And I knew that the picture that I drew was pretty below par. I knew it wasn't great. And I came home, you know, a bit hesitant. But I came home nonetheless. And I remember, because I knew it wasn't great, I was feeling particularly insecure about this picture and probably a bit sensitive about it. And I showed it to my parents. And again, like, this is not to badmouth my parents at all, but I remember their reaction was they found it quite funny because, again, objectively, it was a shit picture, so it was quite funny. And again, they won't know that because to them it's just a funny picture, but I remember to me that just being absolutely traumatising. I think I grabbed it off them, I threw it away, and I was just, again, beside myself with embarrassment about this picture. And I'm pretty sure I then, I can't even remember there. I think they might have wanted to keep the picture because for them, you know what parents are like with children's drawings and artwork and paintings. They like to keep it as, memory. And I found them like looking at it again and, oh my God, I was just beside myself with
just kind of
embarrassment and shame and I've never seen a therapist, and I can imagine it do me a fuck load of good, but I can imagine that is one thing from my childhood in that developmental period. Nailed it as
have
well.
Have you nailed that?
Just nailed that.
Get on, son.
Another bottle of wine. No. And I think that is probably a reason. I mean, who knows? I'm just hypothesizing now. But, I almost place so much value on like what other people think and getting other people's approval. So yeah, man, I think in that period as a child, you just don't know the long-term impact of seemingly innocuous events.
Yeah.
Have on you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I said, for me, it was the catalyst of 10 years of
self-loathing
and depression and, Christ, I'm a cheerful bunch.
One thing I wanted to discuss with you, because I just love this sort of stuff, and I want to give credit where credit's due, is earlier this year, last year when this is released, because let's be honest, I'm not going to get around to releasing this.
This is coming until out in July, isn't it?
Oh yeah, July 2024. This is a new year job. So for context, we're recording this. Yeah. What day is it? 29th? 30th. It's one of those days between Christmas and New Year where you don't have a fucking clue what's going on. But this will be, chucked out in the new year. So last year, 2022, Luxembourg Half Marathon.
Correct.
Prior to that, your longest run was... what was it?
I don't know, 5 metres to the local corner store.
I was going
to
say 5 metres away from the bar when it was your round. You went from nothing... in terms of running ability.
Yes.
To mate, smashing it. You absolutely hammered it.
Yeah.
How was that process? How did you feel after? And what was the impact it had on your overall, again, use the words, but mental health?
Yeah. It was one of the best things I've ever done. And to date, one of the best things I've ever accomplished.
What a night out after, by the way.
Well, maybe for you boys, but I was chafing like nobody's business. So yeah, I did. I had to get a taxi home.
You needed some Vaseline.
After the running. So it came about, I was at my friend Lucy's birthday party, and her brother Danny, friend of the pod...
Friend of the boys.
Friend of the boys.
Yeah.
He had talked about doing the half marathon. I was like, because he was looking really good, Nick. It was the first time I'd seen him in a while. And he was like,
fucking hell, you must have been drunk.
I was absolutely battered. and he was
Shout out to Danny.
And he was looking in really good, Nick, and he was just like, oh mate, I've just been running loads. I was like, sign me up. I'm in. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but I knew I wanted to be in as good a Nick as he was looking. So I started training there and then, and it was, a good 3 months of training, because let's be honest, I've never been in the best shape after my years in the Alps, I never really looked after myself.
You weren't a runner.
I wasn't a runner by any stretch of the imagination.
You did skiing, pretty active, but never running.
But never running. So it was a good opportunity to prove to myself. And I'd always been fascinated by the idea of like long distance running and like endurance sports, your Ironmans and, you know, transatlantic rowing and stuff like that sort of stuff really fascinates me. So I went for it and yeah, I did it. I managed to raise about 2,000 euros for charity, for a small cancer charity in Edinburgh.
Nice.
Called It's Good to Give. And yeah, it was a really difficult process because obviously from not running to having to learn to run a half marathon in a short space of time. And, you know, as a portier fellow such as myself, you know, I had to really go for it. And then the day itself, I was absolutely shitting myself because I was nervous because I thought, what? Well,
it was at 7 p.m. as well.
It was at 7 p.m.
We had a little group chat on the go.
We did.
With the boys, Greggy, Danny, Dan Kayser.
The marathon men.
The marathon men. And we were all just very excited, but more so for the after event activities. And the hardest thing about that day, because it was a glorious day.
Glorious just weather.
Staying off the beers when we were so excited all day.
Yeah.
But mate, massive.
Yeah, and
congrats on that.
I remember, you know, obviously did it. I smashed it in a semi-respectable time for my first time, but it was running through the city centre of Luxembourg and like that buzz of like all those thousands of people like cheering you on, and like kids high-fiving you, like that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then obviously finishing and then like crossing the finishing line, legs are heavy.
Arms are sweaty.
Vomit on a sweater already. Mama's spaghetti. But then like seeing you boys at the end with like a couple of cold ones waiting for me. And it was just like, and then knowing that I'd managed to raise that amount of money for charity.
Phenomenal.
And I would do it again. And I have...
I was going to say, well, you are literally doing it again next year, right?
Yeah.
Or this year.
This year when the pod gets released. Yeah. So yeah, 20th of May, I'm going for it again. And I think It's Good to Give. I'm going to try and raise a bit more money for them. And, you know.
So key takeaways, therapy, running.
Yeah.
Great things.
It's 2022 was a bit of a... Bit of a mad one, but you know it was a hell of a year.
Conscious of the time, because I'm not quite pulling the Joe Rogan number of listeners yet. Not far off.
You'll get there.
Thinking of bringing it home.
Are you?
Thinking of bringing it home.
Oh.
Do you want a bit more?
It's up to you, mate.
Got more to give?
It's Good to Give. It's the name of the charity I'm running.
We could bring it home with a little...
Yeah, sure.
Sit down. We need to finish that off. James.
Really?
Sit down next to me.
James me or James the band?
James band. It's a song that we started at the beginning of the show.
It was.
We're going to bring it home with the chorus.
Those who feel the breath of sadness, sit down next to me. Those who feel it hushed by madness, sit down next to me. In love and fear, in hate and taste, in love and fear, in hate and taste, in love and fear, in hate and taste, in love and fear. Oh, sit down, oh, sit down, oh, sit down. Sit down next to me. Oh, sit down, 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 down in sympathy.
Catch you next time. Love you.